This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 269 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, March 29th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch. And Marcus, spring is in the air. The birds are going crazy here. The sky is blue. Not a cloud in the sky. It's a lot of great weather here. It's a good time to be outside today.
80 degrees yet?
No.
Well, then it's freezing.
Yeah, of course. It figures. You and that California coast.
Yeah. Well, hey, interestingly enough, last week after the show, I went to Tony Robbins in Los Angeles, and I walked on a hot bed of coals with my bare feet, which was awesome, and actually met somebody that listened to the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Out of all those people, thousands of people.
9,000 people were there. Yep.
I was checking out your posts on social media, I think on Facebook, and it looked like just one big long, looked like a gigantic party.
It was intense. Yeah. Really cool. I'm very glad I got to go.
Wow. Listener of the show at a Tony Robbins event. How about that? What are the odds of that, huh?
Well, you know, we do run in such a depressing platform sometimes that you need to pick yourself up.
Speaking of picking ourselves up, we have a cool guest on the show today, and we're going to be talking a little bit about commenting on the web. And our guest is Daniel Ha, and he is the co-founder and CEO of the blog comment platform Disqus, which D-I-S-Q-U-S. It's been around for a while now. And Daniel, pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. Hey, Jeff. Hey, Marcus. Very, very happy to be on the show. And yes, we have Disqus spelled with a Q, and that kind of tells you the story for how long we've been around. It was still in fashion at the time to use Q and Z's within the name of the company.
Yeah. You ever tried to get the actual real name?
Yeah. It was way too expensive at the time. We had a budget of $90 and, we were able to purchase Disqus. Surprisingly, no one had it.
But to this day, you haven't gone back and went, hey, I need Disqus, you know, C-U-S-S.
You know what? Sunk costs. We already put the $45 a month down to go get GoDaddy, and there's no going back from there.
This is back in the day when the whole Web 2.0 craze, when vowels were cool.
Or omitting vowels, yeah.
Or omitting vowels, correct. So speaking of Disqus, why don't you let's start off at the beginning. Tell us about the genesis of the idea and how it got started. How'd you found the company?
Yeah, well, we've been around for a long time. This is actually going to be our 10th year anniversary. We're approaching that coming up pretty soon in the next few months. And, you know, we're all pretty excited about that. You know, for me, I'm not a blogger by background. And it's really through doing Disqus and working within communities like the WordPress community that I've learned a bunch. My background is more in the online community space. Think forums and message boards, IRC, things like that. And, you know, we started what we're doing today as, you know, the way we state it in retrospect is, you know, as a way to help build the future of online communities. And what that actually meant back then was, let's go build something that was more modern, a little bit sexier, and implemented some of the burgeoning social connections that were happening online, and inject that into how people were using forums. And one of the beliefs I had at the time was that online communities were certainly breaking away from these isolated message boards and forums. In fact, they were forming on blogs, actually, with hyper-focused interests. Things like people writing about high school sports or vegan food or Korean dramas or anime, where you have these communities forming around pieces of content people writing about, and the participants or the readership were just as important as the authorship themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so before I even discovered WordPress.com, there were these back in that 2007-2008 time frame. I actually stumbled across it was a custom developed blogging site, blogging service, and once you got involved with it and you started to do the networking aspect of it with the community, and you could follow each other's blogs, and everybody was commenting on each other's sites. Gave you that really cool community feeling.
Yeah, for sure. And that was sort of the simple, you know, day one, day two thesis. We wanted to create a product that was simple enough, but at the same time, elegant, that would help these bloggers kind of plug into the world of online communities. And essentially for them, you know, what we learned was is a way for them to engage readers and hopefully, and this was sort of the long-term vision, connecting those communities through a broader community of users that would aid in what they were doing. So you had all these disparate, you know, communities around video games or anime, and we thought it'd be very interesting to start to loop those together and help them find more of that.
So there are quite a few, I think, moving parts to discuss. Describe to our audience how the service works.
Yeah, well, you know, today, nearly 10 years later, the way we describe it is that, you know, what we do is we have an audience platform and a network for the open web. And our area of expertise is, you know, one, in audience engagement. And then we've started to think about audience management, audience automation, and audience monetization. But even today, we're still known for our popular comment system. We call that Discuss Engage internally. And on WordPress, I think we have, as the plugin, it may be one of the most downloaded of all time. We currently have about 200,000 installs with our WordPress plugin. So this community in particular has always been a big part of how we've thought about getting smart about bloggers and online publishing. Our long-term mission is fairly simple at the end of the day. We love the open internet. We want it to thrive. And, you know, every time I talk about that, I kind of secretly in my head hope that it's not a trite thing to say, because it's something we do believe in. We want to help online publishers succeed. And, you know, we know in talking to them, many of whom are now facing a bunch of challenges and are thinking about just, you know, surviving, let alone thriving. So our commitment is to help these publishers grow and build their audiences, both passive and active ones, whether you're commenting or you're readers or you're any sort of anywhere in the range of engaging with the site, because you're essentially raising your hand as a loyal reader. From that, we kind of built tools to substantiate it. And it all starts with the comment system. That's how we kind of attract people in the first place. And the hope is to expand that value with them over the life cycle of them using our products.
And we were talking about earlier these silos, you know, forums, comment sections on individual sites. One of the sort of unique features of Discuss is that you sign up to Discuss, you have an account, and then you can use that information and comment on any other site that also uses Discuss for their commenting platform. And then you could sort of build or take your profile along with you to all these different sites. It kind of works in a similar fashion to Gravatar, if people are familiar with that concept, where you have one place where you upload your avatar image, and then every other site that supports that will automatically show your avatar, and it makes managing your sort of online identity a bit easier.
Yeah, totally. And I forget when Gravatar kicked off, but it was probably around the same time that Discuss was. And I wasn't personally familiar with it when we started the company. Again, you know, one of my personal weaknesses in the ecosystem is that I wasn't a blogger to begin with. And I learned a lot of that coming from the community space. But, you know, we were inspired by some of the stuff they were doing as we kind of grew it out. There are a lot of really interesting innovations they made when it came to persisting identities across the internet. But of course, one of the first things I learned was that persisting identities is interesting and perhaps convenient, but also very challenging for the very nature of why people participate. They want to be mm-hmm. themselves in certain places, and they don't want to be the same person across all places. And it's like saying you'd wear the same clothes no matter whether you're in a business meeting or you're at a rock concert. So, we try to keep that in mind, and we think about the identities on Discuss as sort of a tool to use in the way that you want.
Well, I just kind of wanted to ask you, you probably think about this a bit, considering the nature of your service, but I just wanted to get your opinion or your thoughts on, what do you think is the state of comments on the web today?
Yeah. Well, I think to kind of understand our take on comments, I'll take a step back and think about the state of online media, because that's changed a bunch. And internet media, in my opinion, is this weird, ever-shifting landscape. And, what we've learned from bloggers and publishers is that it could be a big pain to continually adapt to an ecosystem that just never sits still. We work in an industry that is super complex, simple in some ways, but super complex in other ways, especially as you're growing, because you're dealing with advertising providers and distribution and data and all these things that kind of build on top of that. And this industry is driven by consumer habits, and it dictates so much, and that's something that's always evolving. Consumers have choice, which is great, but that leaves online publishers at a weird disadvantage to social platforms when it comes to providing these personalized experiences. And that means that publishers are increasingly reliant on closed platforms and destinations, particularly Facebook and Google, when it comes to, creating content, finding distribution, building ways to get audience engagement, and ultimately make money from that and build a business. And I think comments factors into that. Ultimately, what we've seen is that the way that publishers use comments has evolved a bunch. Some sites like comments as is, where you kind of have this post box and a comment thread underneath your article, and that works for them. But many, especially the forward-thinking ones, they're thinking about new ways to build audience loyalty. And that may look like comments. That may look like annotations. That may look like letter forms of engagement, like single-click like buttons and things like that. We think a lot about how to marry those solutions that work in the direction that publishers are ultimately getting to, which is I want to solve the problem in which my readers and my customers are finding my content through, search or social, but they don't remember that they got here. And once they leave, they don't remember me ever again. And I don't have any sort of affinity with these customers. I don't have any sort of loyalty with that. And that's the cost of being increasingly reliant on Facebook and Google. The cost is they have your users, your data, and more or less under lock and key. And when search engine results change or newsfeed algorithms change, many publishers do suffer greatly, and they have to scramble to adapt to that. And comments is one of those things where people come back to all the time, which is, hey, if I have people who are essentially part-time contributors and part of a small community of super engaged people, then I have a core base to build upon.
Yeah. And I there was this sort of, I don't know if we can call it a trend, but it's definitely something a lot of these larger websites are either contemplating or have initiated. And that is just disabling the ability to comment at all. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. And I think it's completely fair to call it a trend. We call it a trend internally, and there's a couple trends. There's a trend of eschewing comments altogether. And that comes down to the type of online publications that do exist. I'm a big believer of people omitting comments, traditional comments, if it doesn't fit their mode of content creation and broadcast. If you're writing about local news and you're writing about breaking headlines, you know, often that's where you see some of the worst comments, because it's such a, there's no narrow focused, there's no cultural tie-in for people who care about generic local news. So you have all this general spouting from people from all over. If you're writing about, you know, theories about Westworld, you want comments. You want people to be participating and part of that community. So it really depends on what you're trying to create. So we do see a trend of people getting smarter about, hey, I don't think comments is worthwhile for me. I don't have the resources to promote it or manage it. So why is it here? And I'm personally in complete agreement with that.
And for someone like me, if I'm writing about WordPress, I want my readers to comment and tell me I'm wrong about the stuff I'm writing about. It really comes
as rare as that is.
So what other trends are you noticing internally? I know you mentioned some others.
Yeah. Well, I think to go on what we're talking about there, it's, you know, the trend is not just we're going to kick off comments, but also people are trying to find new ways to engage their audiences. When I say the word audiences, it may sound a little bit fluffy, but it specifically refers to their intended customers, people who are reading. That could be anyone from a passive reader to anyone who is essentially a creator, someone who's active and an evangelist for the content. So by finding a core audience, these publishers can be less reliant on driving volume and page views to their pages, and they think more about new ways to grow their organization. It could be subscriptions, it could be running events, it could be selling merchandise. I think that's a significant part of the future of how online publishers will operate, given, you know, the evolving nature of online media and advertising. And to go do that properly, you can't hand over your entire most passionate users and customers to social platforms. You need to find new ways to attract attention and new ways to build affinity in a relationship with them. So part of that trend is not just kicking off comments, but finding different ways to get them to raise their hand and say, hey, I actually want to be a dedicated returning subscriber to what you're doing. I care about it, versus I'm just going to go read the headline on Facebook, click through maybe once in a while, and then I'll leave forever.
You know, speaking of the user type, you are on multiple platforms. You're on Drupal and WordPress and all that. Of those kinds of platforms, I'm curious, what's the difference in the user base that uses Discuss? Do you find anything unique of like Drupal versus WordPress or any of the other rollouts that you've done?
And by users, you're referring to like the people who implement the software, the publishers?
That's correct. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a really good question. I don't have a articulate way to describe the difference between WordPress and Drupal users. I think there's a lot of similarities. However, we kind of look about the differences between platforms when it comes to the persona types for publishers. You're going to have a consumer level publisher where essentially you are a single user. You're not exactly, you don't really call yourself an online publisher. You don't self-identify as a publisher. You're simply writing about either your day or you're writing about a TV show you like, and you don't expect a lot of readers. So the type of features and tools they use from Discuss is very different from someone. And, you know, you may be using Blogger or Tumblr or something like that where it's more consumer oriented. But for WordPress or Drupal, where there's a bigger sophistication and it feeds larger media companies and organizations, you see a bigger need for some stuff we do. So they care more about data and analytics, and they care about better tools to derive user management across that. So we see the difference being the sophistication level and the hunger for additional things to deal with that volume, versus the consumer level guys and gals. They're not going to really have a big problem around managing volume. They're thinking about it as a smaller volume thing.
Okay, well, just to step back just a little bit from that question, though, let's talk a little bit more like functionality. Do they operate sort of the same way? I don't know so much of the Drupal architecture in reference to what kind of commenting options that they have. I can certainly speak for the WordPress end, but is there any difference in any of the functionality amongst the platforms? Is it all pretty much the same throughout as far as your user experience when using Discuss?
Yeah. Yeah. So our core, the core platform and the software extensions that we provide essentially work the same. What we have in terms of plugins for Drupal or WordPress, it wraps that. So it will it will essentially better interface with tools that you're used to, but it will connect with Discuss pretty much the same way. Mm-hmm. In terms of persona types, I would say that for sites that are a little bit larger, they may hack up Drupal, for example. They're going to do a little bit more using our APIs or playing with different ways of integration and extending the usage of Discuss beyond what we offer out of the box. But for WordPress, for instance, maybe the smaller WordPress bloggers, there's a very robust plugin ecosystem where people sort of plug it in and set it and not tinker too much.
Well, one of the interesting questions that I thought it would be great to ask you. Well, first off, earlier last year, 2016, Adobe acquired Livefyre, which was another online commenting system. Automattic created, sort of ventured into this market with Intense Debate, which is now just sitting on a shelf collecting dust. It's still active. People are still using it, but they're not actively developing it. They're sort of just maintaining it, keeping the lights on, so to speak. I wanted to know, is Discuss a profitable company right now? And what are the revenue generating opportunities around comments? You know, what opportunities are there to make money as a company?
Yeah, yeah. Man, that's a blast from the past. I remember the Intense Debate guys well, and still pretty close with some of the Livefyre team. It's a small community of people who care and think about comments. So sometimes it feels like a little fraternity. And we've all kind of diverted or took on diverse paths over the years. But it's cool to kind of be working on the same challenges. As a business, we are profitable. We are self-sufficient. We've been growing that. We started a few years back, long, long time ago, trying to figure out how does comments make money. That was probably the wrong question to ask. that was the question that people asked us, but we learned that's the wrong question to ask. Comments don't make money by themselves. Providing value to our users, to our customers, makes money. So we got to think about how we go do that. We started out with essentially an enterprise solution that was short-lived because we realized that the thing that we were most excited about was not to, you know, ultimately build an extensive enterprise solution for the biggest of customers, but really to think about the vast, mid to long tail of publishers and bloggers and how we create an interesting ecosystem there and drive value. We moved into a network model, which meant that we wanted to be media supported or run advertising. And it took us a couple years moving through that. And, you know, everything there has been super challenging for us, especially for me. We just learned so much and how it's fed into our business today, which is fairly multifaceted. But over the years, just learning about advertising, you know, the reason that it was challenging from the get-go is that it's a dual-sided marketplace. You know, on one side, we are dealing with the needs of publishers and readers and users. That's sort of the world that we know well. And the other side, we were picking up the whims and the evolving needs of advertisers and ad tech partners that we're working with. And it's been, you know, quite the journey. We had a lot of ups and downs there to try to figure out how that fits with our model, how that fits with what customers actually care about. I'm really happy about how we got out of that, but you know, I think we could have entered that a little bit better. But it's one of those chapters in our history that essentially creates the culture for how we operate today.
I know, and I know the company has experimented, and as you said, you're learning things. I know in 2016, you experimented with something called sponsored comments, which received some backlash. What was the end result of that experiment? What did you learn from that?
So sponsored comments, I'll give a little background on what that was. The idea around sponsored comments, first of all, was it's probably a little bit of a misnomer. We were piggybacking a little bit off the marketability around native sponsored content and how that fits within online content and how that could be effective for publishers. And a lot of that was marketed towards the advertiser side. So they could find a way to effectively reach users in a more targeted way that would drive good results. The reality was that we call that sponsored comments, but we weren't actually sponsoring comments. I think that's sort of a gray area. What we were doing was trying to create really well integrated ad units. You know, we call native because they're not traditional sort of banner ads that would fit within the user experience for publishers and give them a little bit of control around how these new pieces of advertising would fit within either the commenting experience or within their overall page experience. What we learned from that is that there's a lot of effectiveness in driving good performance for advertising by framing the advertising unit in that visual, but we don't need to call it sponsored comments because that's a misnomer for what it is. We call it right now a sponsor story unit, which is essentially a single card that frames one advertiser solution, whatever that may be. And what they're trying to drive is a user to click on that ad to whatever they're trying to promote or sell. And that's one of the biggest lessons that we took away from that.
And sort of on the topic of advertising, we know that Sarah Gooding covered this on the Tavern, and I know other media outlets picked up on this. But Discuss recently wrote out advertising on certain sites allegedly without notifying users. And I was wondering if you could share details on how that was rolled out to users.
Sure. I'm not familiar with what was covered there. But tell me if I'm not
something to the effect of users who were using Discuss mm-hmm. just out of the blue started noticing advertising on their on the Discuss comment section, and I think they were looking into how to remove that, and I think they could either pay $5 or $10 per month, but I don't think at the time the payment process was in place for people to pay to have the advertising removed. And there was some issues there. A common complaint was the communication aspect around changes like this. And I've from what I've read in the media, the communication aspects of changes like this has been something that's been brought up time and time again.
Yeah, for sure. So over the last maybe 18 months, we've been doing a lot of gradual rollout when it comes to advertising across the Discuss network. So there's a very small subset of Discuss that is part of our advertising network. It's under 15% of Discuss as a whole. And what we've done, and this is something that we've been working on to improve the smoothness of, is essentially identify parts of the network in which we qualify for advertising. So from the get-go, our goal was to communicate that Discuss is advertising supported. You may not see advertising because we're not going to have advertising available for those pages. But as we find that, we want to be able to roll it out. And we always having sufficient communication beforehand. So we do outreaches, emails, notifications within the product to let people know that, okay, it's still advertising supported and we will run advertising. One of the challenges we've had, and something we don't have 100% answer to yet, is we don't always have the best contacts for our users. You know, people may be installing Disqus as a media company and they're using our tools and they're actively using our product for that. And that's where we have great communication. We're able to roll out updates, post updates to our blog, send out newsletters, and we always have great engagement there. On the flip side, we may have some sites who are using Disqus through Tumblr or maybe a WordPress plugin or maybe a third-party plugin that wraps Disqus where we don't have the right contact information on email or they're not using the product in the most expected ways. They may not ever come to the product webpage, et cetera. And so a lot of our messaging is lost through that. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily the fault of the plugins or a fault of the publisher. I think it's a challenge that we want to be able to continually address. I think the good news is we've mostly gotten through a number of those challenges with the many years of publishers who have used Disqus. And what we've done now is kind of smooth out our onboarding process so that it's better communicated throughout every step. What you mentioned around sort of the pay $5 or $10, it's fairly new for us. We rolled out a version of Disqus that people can subscribe to. Currently priced at $10 per month where they can choose to configure the advertising completely off. Even if it doesn't currently show, they can choose to say, I never want to see advertising. And that's just to address a growing segment of our publishers where they're not going to fit our ad model. And it's mostly for larger commercial websites. If you don't run advertising and you are a small blog, you can use that version, subscribe to it, what we'll call Disqus Plus, and it'll cost $0. So still for 95% of our network, they can get into that service and not see advertising and still pay us nothing.
And some of the advertising that I have seen, some of the examples and some of the common complaints is that the ads are either too tacky or they're low quality. And I just wanted to know, has there been any work on improving your quality and relevancy? I think it's through the Reveal. Do you have a your own advertising network? I think it's called Reveal.
Yeah, our product is called Reveal, which is essentially the monetization product for publishers where we connect with a bunch of different ad partners and try to help them manage the effective yield across that so they can make the most money. Yeah, for sure. You know, there's a lot of attention and work internally across two areas, which is better targeting. So you have the most relevant advertising or the ones who are going to be most effective for monetization, and then to content quality, just getting better about that. The nature of working with a bunch of different partners is, you know, we don't necessarily onboard individual advertisers and we don't see that ahead of time. So we have to build technology and we are building technology to better handle that.
That was one of my questions was, is there a way as an advertiser to buy into this? But it sounds apparently like you just have to go through one of those third parties.
We have a, you know, primarily programmatic business. So 70% of our advertising business happens through computers bidding on the network. And we work across a bunch of different partners to manage that. It's improving. I think the overall ecosystem and the transparency with that is improving. There's a part of our network where we work directly with customers and where we obviously have better control and scrutiny across that. And our hope is that with the tools available today and what we're building, that starts to extend across 100% of our network.
So let's talk about publishers, those who are using Disqus. Can they earn revenue by using Disqus? Is there a revenue sharing program?
Yeah, that's the entire purpose of our Reveal product, which is to help publishers monetize. And Disqus by default is ad supported, so you can choose to run or to not run ads with a couple of our different plans. Or if you just want the core system and you have a small site, still use it for free. Or you can always just run ads and keep it free, even if you're a larger site. For a subset of partners, they can apply, or we will flag growing partners who are generating ad revenue, and we will reach out to them to activate Reveal, which is more analytics around the revenue earnings, more controls, and a revenue share for that. And our goal is to kind of build a product that helps grow with that, so we're not just monetizing for a larger publisher and they don't see that value. It's not going to help us longer term. So for growing publishers, there's a Reveal product where a revenue share is baked in.
So as you mentioned, you're almost 10 years into this, having a service that deals with hosting comments and conversations. In that 10-year span, we'll do a little bit of reflection here. Mm-hmm. What are some of the most significant challenges that you've overcome in this space?
I think a couple things come to mind. I always think about the complexity of online media, and it's kind of like opening up a lemonade stand, but you don't really, buy lemons, make the lemonade, and sell to someone who will drink lemons. You'll kind of like find out a sponsor for the lemons, and someone may kind of buy some lemonade to arbitrage it and use that as coolant in their car. And there's a bunch of moving pieces that I'm trying to figure out exactly, who gets a value and where it is. And I think one of the biggest challenges that I always come back to is how does the ecosystem work? And by asking myself that question, I realized that most growing publishers are in our shoes, which is, I have no idea how this ecosystem works, and I'm trying to make money, and I'm trying to, pull my users back from social platforms and create better content and get them to engage. And essentially, we are this weird, mega publisher in a way, and we hope that everything that we've learned and build products around kind of trickles down into the way that we design products and use that as a tool for publishers to better grow. So that's one area that I think about a ton. And the second is, we are known as comments. I haven't really thought about discuss as comments really ever. We got our start not with blog comments, but with online communities, and quickly thought about how do we build tools for publishers to better engage. But comments is easy to understand. It's easy to market, and it's something that we treat seriously when it comes to a way for us to appeal to most sites who simply want comments on their site. But it presents challenges in how we think about, okay, well, we want to substantiate that. We want to take how people think about comments into how they think about audience growth and loyalty and lowering bounce rates and increasing pages per visit and all those things. So it's really about battling that perception of, hey, I don't like comments anymore, or comments is not as effective anymore. And in many ways, we answer with, we agree, and this is what we want to do to help that.
Now, where is the technology going, even in terms of the platform? Are we going to be able to come back with video comments to blogs? Everything's so prominent now in terms of video. You can pretty much comment back with your phone almost. Where are you headed in terms of the technology scope?
Yeah, a couple things. One area right now is we look at publishers who spend a lot of time and resources managing users. This is a success problem, right? People who already get the engagement, but it's such a big burden and a big cost center for how they either moderate or they think about how to feed that back into a content strategy. So we've been building a lot of tools and doing a lot of product design around this area specifically. It kind of feeds into a lot of the spotlight around bad, toxic content and how to manage that in this world of hate speech and fake news and all of that. So we put a lot of focus on that right now. The other area is publishers who want to get more value out of Facebook, Google in any closed social destination that is driving great value and is doing a lot for consumers, but for publishers to better leverage that to own those users and to own the loyalty from those customers. So we're building better tools for that, both in terms of customization, capturing logins, managing accounts. To discuss is pretty large footprint and our insight using our data set.
And, you know, WordPress comments in WordPress haven't really changed much in 13 years. Pretty much it's name, URL, comment. And it's pretty much that's the way it's been for the longest time since WordPress has been around. And, you know, I know you own and operate, CEO of a company of a comment platform that can, you know, that has features that seriously enhances conversations and discussions around content. But do you have any thoughts or opinions on, you know, maybe even just a wish list of items that you would like to see the default WordPress commenting system have? You know, you like just one or two features off the top of your head?
Yeah. I have a lot of features off the top of my head. In general, I would say, I would say that I think the best approach is that there's not a one size fits all for publishers. Mm-hmm. And just like page layouts, where you have templates for, you know, if you're creating a portfolio as an artist, or you're trying to create a page for your small business, or you're trying to create a community, or even a content site where you're trying to break news, and you're going to have different layouts to kind of get to that goal. And I think comments play into that significantly too. You're going to want something a little bit different, whether you want serious discussions that look more like New York Times level quality, or you want something fun where the integration of GIFs and emojis and, you know, fun things are surfaced and made apparent. And I think that there are a few different personas that we think about, and I think that fits directly into WordPress defaults that speak to that. If you're going to have different templates for the different types of publishers that want to create content online, then you know, the comments, or more broadly speaking, the way that your readers are going to engage should follow suit.
When we speak of comments, at some point the word spam comes up, and I know it does in the WordPress space. And in 2016, Disqus announced a partnership with the Kismet to handle spam comments and a lot of the other features that Disqus offers. And I wanted to know, is this partnership ongoing? And have you been able to measure the effectiveness of a Kismet?
Yeah, we're really happy with a Kismet. We started out building our own anti-spam. And we asked ourselves a question, do we want to be the best anti-spam solution out there? And we don't. We care about shielding publishers from bad stuff, including spam, and we want to create a good experience around that. But we also want to work with best-in-breed technology providers.
I bet for at least an hour you had that meeting. We are going to make the best anti-spam platform ever.
Yeah, it was a couple hours. As part of that, you know, we looked at other providers as well, and we built things internally to kind of augment it. But ultimately, a Kismet has been really good for us. And, you know, there are things that we feed into it that help us, which is user reputation and what we see about content across our own network, and making some, you know, good software guided or data guided judgments around how we use a Kismet. So
it's interesting. I thought a Kismet would just do all that stuff around comments, but as you said, user ratings and stuff like that, I didn't know a Kismet was able to work on that level or be extended in that way.
We mostly wrap it, so we build features on top of that. A Kismet gives us a really good starting place with the score on the content analysis, and then beyond that, you know, we'll look at other data points that we already have and use that to ultimately make the decision on what is considered X, Y, or Z.
So I did have one listener question that I wanted to ask you, and I was a little bit confused by it, but I figure you'll clarify it. But they wanted to know, why are you removing the capability to sync comments? Which, you know, is a head scratcher to me, because one of the cool features of Disqus is that It has this feature where you can sync comments to the WordPress database. So if at any point you decide to either you need to turn off Discuss or you don't want to use it anymore, all of your comments exist locally in the WordPress database. You don't lose anything. So it was kind of a head scratcher to me that somebody would ask this question. Are there any plans to remove that feature from the plugin?
No, conceptually, and I'm a little bit confused by the question too. So conceptually, we support everything you just said. We believe that pulling comments in and out of Discuss makes it a viable part of this ecosystem of open and interoperable tools. That's important to us. I believe what it may be referring to is some of the brokenness we have in our sync, and we may have taken some services offline to work on them, and in the meantime, doesn't add more brokenness to people who are were trying to sync. So there are improvements coming there, you know, for what we're doing there, syncing will always be part of the solution.
Yeah, it would seem kind of crazy for me to take that out. I mean, that's one of the best features of the plugin. You can have the best of both worlds. It's sure. And at the same time, if you think about it, Discuss acts as sort of like a backup for your comments because you're having them synced locally to your local WordPress install, but they're also hosted in the cloud on Discourse servers as well. So, you know, there's that as well.
Totally.
So, before we wrap it up here, many of the new offerings that you mentioned at the beginning of this year on a blog post on the Discourse blog were scheduled to be released in March or this month. So I was wondering, what could you tell us about their progress?
You cut out just slightly over there. Could you repeat that?
I just wanted to know if you could tell us the progress of the new Discourse offerings you mentioned at the beginning of the year. We're at the end of March. And March looked like the sort of planned, scheduled month to have most of these items released. So,
oh yeah, so Discuss Plus and Discuss Pro, we're just nearing the end of March now. So, what we had this month was Discuss Plus, which was the initial, you know, the first thing we've done to offer subscription version of Discuss that will allow people to turn off advertising for a small fee. And that was sort of a prequel to something we're really excited around for Discuss Pro, which is essentially a package that allows everything you get with Discuss Plus, but also additional, more professional level features for growing publishers. And it's going to include things like improved single sign-on, more extended analytics, and customization features. And one of the biggest features we have there is essentially the growing roadmap, and we're going to be open about what we're trying to build and all the things I'm talking about as part of a growing list of features you will get with Discuss Pro.
Excellent. That sounds good, especially for those who really enjoy the Discuss service. Marcus, I'll hand it over to you. Do you have any last questions here for Daniel before we let him go and continue doing awesome work?
What do you think services like Yelp are doing wrong in the way that they have sort of their customer feedback or user feedback? What are they doing wrong that they could do better?
That's a solid question. I'm not sure. I'm the expert there. I actually like Yelp.
Well, like Yelp, I just thought as an industry expert, you know, that you would see something like that and go, yeah, but they don't have algorithms to do X, Y, and Z, or, you know, there's too many fakes or something like that.
Yeah, in Yelp in particular?
Any of those user review places.
You know, I think Yelp is doing a much better job. I think the criticism I've seen over the last few years for something like Yelp, I've seen some good effort improvements from that team. But in general, you're looking at context when you read reviews, just like when you read comments. You want to understand whether or not they are, when they say they like something, you want to understand whether or not they like these places because they really care about the ambience and the decor and the overall experience versus whether or not this person is someone who's really into food. That's very, it's a combination of, you know, more simple-ended user interaction and user experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of putting data to good use and pulling that out. A service like Quora, or even if you look at some of the forums within Reddit, you know, they've tackled this in simple ways where you add sort of flares to a user where you kind of contextualize what people are saying, sometimes for good and sometimes for bad. But, you know, if someone is saying something and they have a flare next to them that, you know, says they are a fan of this basketball team or that their favorite hobby is cooking, then it kind of contextualizes some of these things. And for Quora, they kind of put your, I think, your background or any sort of user-defined flare there. For Yelp, they've done some stuff to kind of surface it, whether or not you're a longtime user or not. But I like the idea of contextualizing what people say, and that adds a bunch of context to how you would receive the review.
That makes sense.
You know, but back in 2007, I was involved with, I was creating my own community with WP Tavern, and I was using vBulletin, but I was very much aware of PHPBB. There was Vision Board, and there was a few others as well. And forum software kind of, there really wasn't much in the way of innovation in many of the forum products, but I just wanted to know if you've checked out something by Jeff Atwood called Discourse. Mm-hmm. It's I think it runs on Ruby. It's a updated technology stack, but it's got real time mentioning of folks. And I've checked out WP Chat is actually one of the WordPress community sites that uses Discourse, and I like it. I really enjoy it. I mean, the real-time interactions and the different ways of kind of creating a community and using it as a forum. I mean, I think it's a huge leap compared to what I'm used to in terms of forum software.
Yeah, I agree. I like it a lot. I think it's a really good solution if you're looking for a message board that you can tinker with today. Jeff actually reached out a few years back, right prior to Discourse, to get some thoughts around online communities, to prepare in building that, we chatted a bunch about sort of the problem with message boards and what people can be doing to improve them. So I'm excited for seeing for how that's grown, and I haven't kept up with the product myself, but I hear good things.
Excellent. So Daniel, I wanna thank you again for spending some of your valuable time here on the show and giving us some insight into Discourse, how it works, and clarifying some things that have been in the media recently. And good luck with Discord Plus and Discord Pro. I'm saying Discord. That's a totally different thing. Discourse Plus and Discourse Pro. Good luck with those rollouts. I'm looking forward to reading some blog posts on the company blog about that. And if people want to get in touch with you or they have questions or want to follow you on social media, how can they do that?
Yeah, so we're very communicative on our blog. We're writing often, and obviously we care about comments. On Twitter, I'm just Daniel Hawk. We have a small community on discuss.com/home, which is our own discuss-run community pages where people can chat as well.
And the blog is blog.discuss.com, and that's where you'll find all the information regarding recent announcements. Daniel, thanks again.
All right. Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Marcus.
Thanks.
All right. So there you have it, the CEO and co-founder of Discuss. Pretty cool interview. And Marcus, what do we have for plugging picks of the week, which ironically, one deals with comments.
That's right. All right. Well, the old what's in your wallet, something gives you cash back. Well, now it's available for WooCommerce with this plugin called WooCashback. And it provides the customer of your WordPress website with their own personal wallet on your site with the way to purchase items from your store while using their wallet money. So what happens is that you can assign so many cashback credits to different products that people buy, and then they can come back and make future purchases using that wallet balance. Now, the really nice thing is, let's just say you had a membership program and you had some ebooks on the side. This would actually maybe credit that only you could use on ebooks because only those products are eligible to be used out of the wallet. Very cool concept. I love this plugin. It's called Woo Cash Back. The next one is comment related, and it's called Export Comment Emails, and it allows you to export the emails from all of your comments into a CSV or an XML file, allowing import to services like Constant Contact, MailChimp, ConvertKit, or any kind of manual file import. It also would work if you wanted to build a custom audience in Facebook. So you could take all of those people that left their email and then re-import that into an audience. And finally, we've got a new tool out called WP Monitor, and it adds a small dashboard to the dashboard of your WordPress install. And it shows the latest updates, site and server information, and it does it very simply. So you can look at things like all the updates that occurred for plugins, theme updates, WordPress core updates, your PHP version, SSL data, recent user logins, total updates needed on your site, or installations that need to be upgraded. And finally, it gives you a website grade for your overall site status. That's called WP Monitor, and those are my plugin picks of the week.
Speaking of PHP, we recently updated the Tavern from WP Tavern. It was running like 5.28 or some really old version of PHP. We upgraded it to PHP 7. And folks, aside from the security issues and just updating in general, the speed difference is amazing. It's like night and day difference. So WordPress back end loads so much quicker under PHP 7. I was shocked, and we actually had some benchmark numbers that showed a decrease in loading times for the site, especially time to first byte. And I was very impressed and sort of facepalming myself almost to death because why didn't we do this sooner? It was such a simple task. I just had the web host do it for us, and now the Tavern is running PHP 7. I'm not exactly sure which version. I know that the PHP 7.1 is out, which I think is even faster. But holy moly, if you can out there, if you're listening, and you are running an old version of PHP, you owe it to yourself and to your website and to the performance enhancements and performance improvements from running PHP 7 to at least set up a test site to test your site, your setup to see if it works. I know that some plugins, some themes, there are some incompatibilities out there, but with WordPress core itself, it's generally pretty stable with PHP 7, and wow, the back end, I'm impressed. I'll just say that. And I'm really enjoying the speed increase now in loading posts and other pages in the WordPress backend, as opposed to 5. Whatever it was we were using, where it was slow, it was bad.
So you're saying you like it? Stop sugarcoating it.
Yes, I like it. I like PHP 7. I am now on the bandwagon. Everybody, update now.
Call your host provider now.
Yes, and demand you want PHP 7. Don't just ask for it; demand it.
I want my PHP.
Right? There you go. Hey, I like that. Let's see. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of WordPress Weekly. Next week, Marcus is going to do an unboxing. I actually fulfilled my promise, or I paid off my bet that I lost dealing with the World Series. It took me a while and a couple of reminders, but I did it. So we'll have a little bit of fun next week. We'll do an unboxing. We'll figure out what Marcus got in his box. Yeah,
here it is, people, if you want to guess in the meantime. It's in the box.
I don't know what's in there, but we'll cover some of the news headlines. We'll talk about some things. In fact, we'll even talk a little bit about some podcast news that came out today dealing with Google. Yes. Google with indexing podcasts. So I'll probably go through that process and talk more about it next week, along with all kinds of other cool stuff.
Not the first time, by the way. They did it a long time ago and then dropped it.
Oh, okay. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to look into that.
But I may also have a big announcement next week that's WordPress related that is pretty cool, but I'm not going to talk about it until it's official and launched. It's official. I'm on their Slack channel, so it's official. But something cool is happening.
What a teaser. In the business, they call that a tease. That's right. In the business.
Stay tuned to this feed.
So that's going to do it for this week's edition of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. And as always, if you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. 4-star, 5-star, 3-star, no star. Just tell us what you think of the show. Just be honest. Let us know. And we'll read it on the air, including any shout-outs you want to give.
Right, or a link to your website if you're in the design business. Hint, hint.
Yeah, how about that? And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, J-E-F-F-R-0, and Marcus.
Find me at my website, MarcusCouch.com, on Twitter at MarcusCouch.
Until next week, everybody have a safe, enjoyable rest of the week. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. So long, everybody.